Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
The Process of Devotional Service, Madhya Lila Chapter 22, Text 147. Quote, O hunter, good qualities like non-violence, which you have developed, are not very astonishing. For those who are engaged in Lord's devotional service are never inclined to give pain to others because of envy. This is a quotation from the Skanda Purana. My dear Sanatana, I have now in detail described devotional service according to the regulative principles. Now hear from me about spontaneous devotional service and its characteristics. Translation: The original inhabitants of Vrindavan are attached to Krishna spontaneously in devotional service. Nothing can compare to such spontaneous devotional service which is called ragatmika bhakti. When a devotee follows in the footsteps of the devotees of Vrindavan, his devotional service is called raganuga bhakti. Report: In his Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami states, very long Sanskrit quote, when a pure devotee follows the footsteps of a devotee in Vrindavan, he develops raganuga bhakti. Translation: When one becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his natural inclination to love is fully absorbed in thoughts of the Lord. At the stage of attachment, his natural inclination to love is fully absorbed in thoughts of the Lord. That is called transcendental attachment or devotional service according to that attachment is called ragatmika, or spontaneous devotional service. This is from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The primary characteristic of spontaneous love is deep attachment for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Absorption in Him is a marginal characteristic. Thus, devotional service, which consists of raga, or deep attachment, is called ragatmika, spontaneous devotional service. If a devotee covets such a position, he is considered to be most fortunate. If one follows in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan out of such transcendental covetousness, he does not care for the injunctions or reasonings of Shastra. That is the way of spontaneous love. And in long purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that a devotee is attracted by the service of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, namely the cowherd men, Maharaj Nanda, Mother Yasoda, Radharani, the gopis and the cows and the calves. An advanced devotee is attracted by the service rendered by an eternal servitor of the Lord. This attraction is called spontaneous attraction. Technically, it is called svarup upalabdhi. This stage is not achieved in the beginning. In the beginning, one has to render service strictly according to the regulative principles set forth by the revealed scriptures and spiritual master. By continuously rendering service through the process of vaidhi bhakti, one's natural inclination is gradually awakened. That is called spontaneous attraction or raganuga bhakti. An advanced devotee situated on the platform of spontaneity is already very expert in shastra construction, logic, and argument. When he comes to the position of eternal love for Krishna, no one can deviate him from that position, neither by argument nor by shastric evidence. an advanced devotee has realized his eternal relationship with the Lord, and has consequently he does not accept the logic and arguments of others. Such an advanced devotee has nothing to do with the Sahajiyas, who manufacture their own way and commit sins by indulging in illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling, if not meat-eating. Sometimes the Sahajiyas imitate advanced devotees and live in their own whimsical way, avoiding the principles set down in the revealed scriptures. Unless one follows the six Goswamis, Sri Rupa Sanatana Raghunath Bhatta, Sri Jiva Gopal Bhatta, and Raghunath Das, one cannot be a bona fide, spontaneous lover of Krishna. In this connection, Srila Narottama Das Thakur says, Rupa Raghunatha Pade, Haive Akuti, Kave Hama Bhujhaba Ye Yugala Priti. The Sahajiya's understanding of the love affairs between Radha and Krishna is not bona fide, because they do not follow the principles laid down by the six Goswamis. Their illicit connection and their imitation of the dress of Rupa Goswami, as well as their avoidance of the prescribed methods of revealed scriptures, will lead them to the lowest regions of hell. These imitative Sahajiyas are cheated and unfortunate. They are not equal to advanced devotees, Paramahamsas. Debauchees and Paramahamsas are not on the same level. Answered right in the purport. Unless one follows the six Goswamis, one cannot be a bona fide spontaneous lover of Krishna. But the teachings of Rupa Goswami indicate not just that the standards of spontaneity, but even when one is in the spontaneous stage, one will follow for a setting example, and also because that is according to the teachings of Rupa Goswami. They themselves observed worship and chanting of rounds and so many principles. It's both for setting an example, and it's also an indication of their advancement. They're attached to those things which bring one closer to Krishna. So the answer is no. Again, unless one follows the six Goswamis, one cannot be a bona fide spontaneous lover of Krishna. Then their heart is off by the standards of Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and therefore that sentiment in their heart is not to guide, shouldn't be accepted as the guiding principle. Exactly what's being addressed in the verse, in the purport, Prabhupada's explanation. If someone claims to be in that position, I'm just thinking I have to, some managerial thing that I have to do. Just thought of it. Is Murali Krishna around? Thank you.
need a driver. Could you kiss the road to him? Can you, Raghunath, can you come here? Let me just tell you. One moment.
Sahajas that are being described here, the extreme case of the Sahajas, are those that you can find in holy places that simply perform a show practically for professional purposes to attract followers, and that's their means of maintenance. Those followers maintain them, but and to support their inclination for sinful life, debauchery. Because foolish people who don't know the standard of spiritual life will become attracted, thinking, oh, this spontaneously ecstatic personality is so wonderful, as they engage in their Radha Krishna love affairs together and take their intoxications together and so on. But the milder degree of sahaji is also one, as Maharaj is describing, the would-be devotee who's thinking, it's all a matter of, I have a very strong attachment and feeling for doing a particular thing at a particular time, regardless of the recommendation that you find in the earlier stages of devotion. The earlier stages of devotion cannot be ignored in the more advanced stages. They cannot, for the purpose of instruction. They can for the purpose of advancement, but they are not for the purpose of instruction. Yes? Cause of fall down in the case of someone who has performed strict sadhana is not because of their performance of strict sadhana, but because of negligence in some other important area of devotional service. It's backwards argument. Anyway, Prabhupada addresses that here also, that at least as far as the stage of attraction and then attachment, that one cannot be budged by material arguments. If there is some recommendation found within in Shastra, even just the person with good common sense or a little bit of wisdom will follow and heed that direction. Someone who is thinking, who is putting forward the argument that I don't need to heed these directions, is a fool. You can know immediately that argument is the argument of a fool. A few more verses. Devotional service in spontaneous love is vividly expressed and manifested by the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Devotional service that accords with their devotional service is called Raganuga Bhakti, or devotional service following in the wake of spontaneous loving service. This is also from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When an advanced, realized devotee hears about the affairs of the devotees of Vrindavan in the mellows of Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya, he becomes inclined in that way, and his intelligence becomes attracted. Indeed, he begins to covet that particular type of devotion. When such covetousness is awakened, one's intelligence no longer depends on the instructions of Shastra, revealed scripture, logic, or argument. Another point to be made in in this connection with these questions that Maharaj is asking, the whole was Lord Chaitanya is describing. He has already extensively discussed the Vaidhi Bhakti stage. So one cannot, and one should not be fooled, one cannot just pass over the regulative stage as if one is automatically by some special grace and mercy of God no longer required, just completely bypassing the preliminary stages. If one doesn't exhibit the quality of one who is very advanced in the in one's sadhana bhakti or vaidhi bhakti devotional service, then that person is to be understood also as a pretender or another person simply making a bluff for the purpose of attracting followers, winning fame and acclaim. But this state, just as the verses is reading, when an advanced devotee realizes about, when an advanced realized devotee hears about the affairs of devotees of Vrindavan, so then that's with the qualification that someone is an advanced devotee. The advanced devotee is already defined extensively in the previous section. There are two processes by which one may execute this Raghunuga Bhakti, external and internal. When self-realized, the advanced devotee externally remains like a neophyte and executes all the shastra conjunctions, especially hearing and chanting. I'll read that again. This addresses your question. When self-realized, the advanced devotee externally remains like a neophyte and executes all the shastra conjunctions, especially hearing and chanting. However, within his mind, in his original purified self-realized position, he serves Krishna in Vrindavan in his particular way. He serves Krishna 24 hours, all day and night. Again, quote, the advanced devotee who is inclined to spontaneous loving service should follow the activities of a particular associate of Krishna in Vrindavan. He should execute service externally as a regulative devotee, as well as internally from his self-realized position. Thus he should perform devotional service both externally and internally. So this is the standard. Actually, the inhabitants of Vrindavan are very dear to Krishna. If one wants to engage in spontaneous loving service, he must follow the inhabitants of Vrindavan and constantly engage in devotional service within his mind. Further comments or questions? Answer that question? The principal injunctions, you know the answer. The principal injunctions are encompassed by the main injunction. As Rupa Goswami summarizes, all the regulative principles have a central purpose: remembering Krishna, never forgetting him, surrendering to Krishna with full utilization of one's body, minds, and words in his service. Excuse me? wasn't his question. I certainly agree with your point. However, there are more principal injunctions. For us, in particular, Prabhupada has given us certain standards to conduct our devotional service by. Those standards that Prabhupada has given us do not include all of the regular principles of devotional service. Those principal standards are those standards that accomplish the progressively full surrender to Krishna. The answer that I gave still stands. In the case of the particular difference that you're pointing out, such adjustments certainly cannot be made whimsically, nor can they be made by anyone in a lesser position than such an empowered acharya as Prabhupada. That takes care of all of us. We should not change anything that Prabhupada has given us. But the time and circumstance adjustment is actually the duty of the empowered acharya to, as Prabhupada writes, to produce the ways and means by which disciples can be fully engaged in Krishna service. In that connection, Prabhupada's comment, as I'm sure you're well aware, in the Western countries, people are so much inclined to excessive activity. Therefore, to sit and chant 64 rounds per day would be so difficult, such an ordeal. Therefore, this adjustment. But filling our day's activities, as he writes, 24 hours a day, with full devotional service throughout the course of one's day, and this way become purified to the point of reaching the conclusion. The rule and regulation has not been changed. It's been adjusted. It hasn't been eliminated. And the basic end is being served. It's not our prerogative to make those changes. Satisfied? Do you want to discuss it further? Okay. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Na Bhavan Abadhid Yakshan Na Yaksha. Rataram Tava Kala Eva Hi Bhutanam Prabhur Apyaya Bhavayo Nabhavan Abadhit Yakshan Na Yaksha Prataram Tava Kala Eva Hi Bhutanam Prabhur Apyaya Bhavayo Na Bhavan Abadid Yakshan Na Yaksha Brataram Tava Kala Eva Hi Bhutanam Prabhur Apyaya Bhavayo Nabhavan Abadid Yakshan Not Yaksha, the Yakshas, Brataram, brother, Tava, your, Kala, time, Eva, certainly, he, for, Bhutanam, of living entities, Prabhu, the Supreme Lord, Apyaya Bhavayo, of annihilation and generation. Translation, actually you have not killed the Yakshas, nor have they killed your brother. For the ultimate cause of generation and annihilation is the eternal time feature of the Supreme Lord. The first two verses have no purport, and I'll read them and then this purport. Text 1, translation. The great sage Maitreya said, my dear Vidura, Dhruva Maharaja's anger subsided and he completely ceased killing Yakshas. When Kuvera, the most blessed master of the treasury, learned this news, he appeared before Dhruva. While being worshipped by the Yakshas, Kinnaras, and Chanaras, he spoke to Dhruva Maharaj, who stood before him with folded hands. The master of the treasury, Kuvera, said, O sinless son of a Kshatriya, I am very glad to know that under the instruction of your grandfather you have given up your enmity, although it is very difficult to avoid. I am very pleased with you. Actually, you have not killed the Yakshas, nor have they killed your brother, for the ultimate cause of generation and annihilation is the eternal time feature of the Supreme Lord. Purport, when the Master of the Treasury addressed him as sinless, Dhruva Maharaj, considering himself responsible for killing so many Yakshas, might have thought himself otherwise. Kuvera, however, assured him that factually he had not killed any of the Yakshas. Therefore, he was not at all sinful. He did his duty as a king, as it is ordered by the laws of nature. Quote, nor should you think that your brother was killed by the Yakshas, said Kuvera. He died, or was killed, in due course of time, by the laws of nature. Eternal time, one of the features of the Lord, is ultimately responsible for annihilation and generation. You are not responsible for such actions, unquote. I'd like also to read the following verse because it immediately ties in. This is the... these two sentences are the statements that Kuvera is making to Dhruva Maharaj. And then Dhruva replies. So text number 4. Translation, misidentification of oneself and others as I and you on the basis of bodily concept of life is a product of ignorance. This bodily concept is the cause of repeated birth and death, and it makes us go on continuously in material existence. Purport, the conception of I and you, aham, tvam, as separate from each other is due to our forgetfulness of our eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Person, Krishna, is the central point, and all of us are his parts and parcels, just as hands and legs are parts and parcels of the whole body. When we actually come to this understanding of being eternally related to the Supreme Lord, this distinction, which is based on the bodily concept of life, cannot exist. The same example can be cited herewith. The hand is the hand, and the leg is the leg. When both of them engage in the service of the whole body, there is no such distinctions as hands and legs, for all of them belong to the whole body, and all the parts working together constitute the whole body. Similarly, when the living entities are in Krishna consciousness, there is no such distinction as I and you, because everyone is engaged in the service of the Lord. Since the Lord is absolute, the services are also absolute. Even though the hand is working one way and the leg is working in another way, since the purpose of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are all one. Since the purpose is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are all one. This is not to be confused with the statement of the Mayavad philosopher that everything is one. Real knowledge is that the hand is hand, leg is leg, body is body, and yet all together they are one. As soon as the living entity thinks that he is independent, his conditional material existence begins. The conception of independent existence is therefore like a dream. One has to be in Krishna consciousness, his original position. Then he can be freed from material bondage. Omagyana Timurandhasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksuna Minitam Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So Kuvera is pointing out some very important understanding. Expecting Dhruva Maharaj to begin lamenting. Now that he's understood something that he's taken part in, that's wrong behavior, the following, given humility, the natural humility of a Vaishnav, he's expecting him to feel badly and lament over his mistake. But Kuvera is giving him a little, not just encouragement, but also philosophical understanding. Given that the cause of generation and annihilation is the Supreme Lord through the time factor, then we cannot claim, philosophically, we cannot claim to be the cause of any action or the result of that action. Rather, the time feature. Just as living entities begin, as the explanation is given in the Bhagavatam, that when the living entities mix with the material ingredients, that alone is not sufficient for creation to begin to manifest. But the time factor is also mixed. Without the touch of the Supreme Lord, living entities can do nothing. This time factor is a very difficult feature to understand. It is bringing about the creation of all things in time. We use this phrase all the time. In due course of time, everything will come, and in due course of time, everything will be also annihilated. Of those things that are created and destroyed, the time factor is such a vital element. Kuvera further goes on to delineate what he means by this, that time has done all things. That one should not see one's existence separate from God. This is the main point that Kuvera wants to establish. Because if you think of yourself as separate, then you're in illusion. The delicateness of this philosophy Prabhupada indicates in the purport. It should not be understood in this in one direction or in the other direction. In the direction of Mayavad philosophy, then I have no responsibility for what I do. Dhruva could think, I killed and so many people are now dead, but actually I did nothing. It's the time factor. Krishna did it all, and he could kill or not kill. One can act or not act. It's completely whimsical. Or you could act as the if the proper philosophy is it's all one, then you can act and not act in another way, and it's you're absolved of responsibility because actually we're not acting because it's all one. Acting is the same as not acting. Not acting is the same as acting. It's all one. When we're done, you can ask questions. This is impersonal philosophy. In the absolute, there are no differentiations. This isn't the philosophy that Kuvera is presenting. This isn't the philosophy of the absolute truth. It's not the philosophy that Prabhupada is espousing in the purport, either. He's making it very clear. The hand is the hand. The leg is the leg. But when you look in the broader perspective, it's the whole parts of the whole body. The body is the whole, and these are the parts. The parts are legitimately parts. We're all parts, and so in the same way, all souls are parts and parcels of the personality of Godhead. Each having a particular function to serve in relation to the whole. For the whole is the personality of Godhead. And we are the parts, eternally, the parts. Not that the Mayavad philosophy notion has it that then the parts simply have to become the whole again. The parts are eternally the parts. The spirit souls are eternally part and parcel. Using Prabhupada's analogy of spiritual mathematics, 1 - 1 = 1. If all the living entities, of course you cannot annihilate all the living entities because they're eternal, but if you could annihilate all the living entities, still the supreme whole would be complete. If everything in creation were obliterated completely, it is not that the supreme whole is anything less. The supreme whole is complete. This is the inconceivable feature of the Supreme Lord. He can expand himself unlimitedly and not be reduced. Nothing materially can be expanded without reducing it. Even a material scientist, crazy speculative scientists, don't claim something as far out as that. In the spiritual position, Krishna can expand unlimitedly and in limited parts and parcels, all eternally existing as his parts and parcels. The higher sense, however, those parts and parcels, although they have their separate identity, that separate identity cannot be understood apart from the whole. And this is the point that Kuvera is making. You may have done this activity, but actually, in a higher sense, you haven't. You've fallen into illusion, you've been corrected from that illusion by your grandfather. I'm very pleased that you've been corrected by your grandfather. I'm very pleased with you. But now, don't think that you've done anything. This is true even in devotional service, what to speak of in the activities of illusion. In activities that are performed in an illusory manner, say for the karmi, the fruitive worker. The fruitive worker is working so hard. very strenuous effort is being made to accomplish their material ends. But actually, they're doing nothing. Everything is being conducted by the modes of material nature. This is elementary Bhagavad Gita philosophy. The soul is doing nothing. Everything is being conducted by the modes of material nature. He doesn't get the credit. Therefore, he can't also further claim proprietorship over that which is produced of his endeavor. And for the devotee also, in devotional service, whatever activities produce some given result, given that they are performed in Krishna consciousness, those activities are performed on behalf of the internal energy, through the agency of the internal energy of the Lord. And therefore also, whatever is produced is the property of Krishna. So actually we're doing nothing. But Kuvera is making certain that Dhruva understands. He's giving him very nice instruction, as an elevated soul will do. He's giving very nice instruction how to not misunderstand his position as an eternal servant of the Lord. One of the points I wanted to specifically highlight is what Prabhupada is saying in the purport. Here, Kuvera, however, assured him that factually he had not killed any of the yakshas, therefore he was not at all sinful. He did his duty as a king, as it is ordered by the laws of nature. Now, the killing that Dhruva had taken part in, needless to say, is not the killing of a soul. Soul cannot be killed. But that wasn't even the argument that Kuvera was giving. Dhruva, you shouldn't lament because the soul was never killed. Therefore, you haven't killed anybody. That wasn't at all the point that he was making. That point is made in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. The wise lament for neither the living nor the dead. Part of the material energy is something that can be performed sinfully or can be performed sinlessly. So the argument that Kuvera is presenting is, as a Kshatriya, you have performed your duty. Because you have performed your duty at using this body in a particular given way, you're sinless. Of course, the point in question is the excessiveness of the violence that Dhruva Maharaj has used. And his point is here in the previous verse, O sinless son of a Kshatriya, I am very glad to know that under the instruction of your grandfather you have given up your enmity, although it is very difficult to avoid. This means in the practically speaking for us, in the course of the practical execution of our devotional service, there are innumerable pitfalls or dangers by which our devotional service can be deviated. In the case of the Kshatriya, one who is performing administrative duty, as Dhruva Maharaj, with not just ordinary administrative duty, but actually having to bring about the death of other persons, dutifully bringing about the death of other persons, great anger has to be there. Otherwise, how can a king, administrator, perform with his own hand such an activity without anger? Must be there. And as Kuvera is indicating, anger is very difficult to avoid. This was being stated in the previous chapter also. A little anger is difficult. A little anger very easily becomes excessive. the point that he was making to Dhruva is, because you've been checked by your grandfather, this is the very pleasing thing. You've become angry dutifully, and you've been checked dutifully also. Checked by good instruction. Therefore, I'm very pleased. Therefore, you are sinless. So in the practical execution of our devotional service, again, there are so many dangers, so many slight deviations, or more than slight deviations, that we're running the risk of performing. With the slightest degree of inattentiveness, or even with full attentiveness, the danger, the risk is there. So the correcting factor is good instruction of elevated personalities. And the resolving feature also Kuvera is presenting to Dhruva by this explanation of differentiating material consciousness from spiritual consciousness. In the material consciousness, one is thinking I and you. Within devotional service, however, one does not think in this way. One thinks in terms of the whole. This Prabhupada is pointing out in the purport. One thinks of all the different elements of devotional service are part of the complete picture of serving Krishna. If one has to take some action in on behalf of Krishna, in serving Him, the devotional conception, the devotional attitude towards that activity is to see it entirely as part of falling within the jurisdiction of Krishna's internal energy. It's all part of one's devotional service, which is all within the jurisdiction of Krishna. One is not thinking in this way, then one is thinking of oneself as the doer, the cause of the result of the reaction, and therefore, as Krishna explains to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, one will then have to suffer the good or the bad reaction for that activity. If one is in material consciousness thinking, I am the performer of this activity, the saving grace for us all is the fact that if our devotional service is being performed on behalf of a bona fide spiritual master, even those imperfections, those adjustments can be made. If one is acting in an authorized manner, authorized meaning according, just as our prior discussion was going on this morning, in reference to the Chaitanya Charitamrita section. If one is engaged in, even there are dangers and difficulties that may come in the execution of devotional service, especially when one is not fully purified. That means all of us who are not fully purified. Even there is some discrepancy. If that service is authorized by the spiritual master and the scripture, authorized activity that is genuinely being performed with the idea of trying to accomplish the pleasure of Krishna and Guru, those discrepancies are then resolved. Spiritual master accepts, just like Prabhupada's point about installing deities. He commented in several occasions that from the a great risk was being undergone by him in installing deities, because on his behalf his disciples were performing that deity worship. And so many offenses, the risk is there for so many offenses to be made. In fact, Prabhupada knew so many offenses would be made. But Prabhupada's disciples, at least when he was initially installing the deities, his disciples were performing that worship on behalf of him. He installed the deity, and his disciples were worshipping the deity on his behalf. Prabhupada would say like this, if you stop performance of that worship, then I have to come personally. What you are doing on my behalf. So the offenses Prabhupada was accepting himself. praying to Krishna to please forgive these offenses, because it became his burden. But the burden was accepted by Prabhupada for the advancement of his disciples to become progressively, gradually, free from offenses. Someone can actually worship Krishna offenselessly. And the whole of devotional service is that way also. Not just deity worship, every aspect of devotional service. As long as one's activities are authorized by the spiritual master and by the scripture. I remember one lecture, Prabhupada was describing a major portion of the lecture. Prabhupada was describing how difficult it is to go back to the spiritual world. Once coming to this material world, once becoming involved in the network of action and reaction, the law of karma is so strong, the force of lust is so powerful, the whole dynamic of the material energy has so many living entities completely bewildered, totally an illusion, so difficult to extract oneself. And then Prabhupada just reversed the course of his lecture and then was explaining how very easy it is by this process of devotional service. And he concluded by saying that if one simply follows the regular principles, chants 16 rounds daily, and always engages in authorized devotional service, surely he will go back home, back to Godhead at the end of his life. So one must be very careful that one's activity, in addition to following the regular principles and chanting of 16 rounds, that one's activities are always authorized. Otherwise, why will those activities be accepted? If something is whimsically being performed, as Maharaj has been reading in these letters in the morning, commenting yesterday morning about Prabhupada's repeated complaint about Western devotees or American devotees having a tendency to invent things, to want to change things. And Prabhupada was remarking very strongly his displeasure. Why would Prabhupada be obliged to accept something that's concocted or whimsically changed? Why would one spiritual master be obliged to accept the would-be devotional service of something that's just a concoction? That's not devotional service. But even if it's imperfectly performed, if the activity is authorized activity, then it will be accepted. And because of the presence of Krishna, that activity will gradually become perfectly performed, because the consciousness of the performer will gradually become cleansed. And that is the comment that Kuvera is making to Dhruva. It appears that there is some serious flaw or discrepancy here, but actually there is no flaw. You're sinless. You acted according to prescribed duty. You've been checked according to good instruction of your grandfather. You immediately ceased the exercise of that improper action and the improper exercise of your anger. So you're sinless. It's 8:30. Sure, so the devotees in the kitchen can understand. We'll put it, we'll say it in terms of chapatis, okay? Oh, very nice, Janaka. This morning you made 1,000 chapatis. And this way we're encouraging the devotees in terms of their practical activity, the results of their activity. We're not hearing so much the philosophy that we're not the doer. So your question is, why don't we hear that more often? It's common. Both are there. Result of some activity comes from some endeavor. There are 5 factors to action. Ultimately, the super soul, and that's the feature that Kuvera is commenting specifically to in Dhruva's case. For sure. Because they're seeing that way does not mean they endeavor less, but they're on the spontaneous platform. No, it's engaging people. No, it's not exploiting because it's increasing their devotional service to Krishna. By increasing one's devotional service, one will gradually become purified, is it not? Why? The philosophy is certainly there. Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is there to explain completely. Self-realized devotee will see in that way. One who's not a completely self-realized devotee will see in some other way. We certainly speak that way in terms of Prabhupada. Certainly speaking that way in terms of Prabhupada's accomplishments, quantifiable accomplishments. But the spiritual principle is the same. Of books distributed or funds donated and so forth, we should properly give all credit to Prabhupada. Little smatterings of tiny glorification to Prabhupada, if one is performing that activity with the right understanding and in the right consciousness. Further comment? Do something in an unconscious state. I mean, in a materially conscious state. May I clarify? Ask you a couple of questions to make sure I understand what your question is.
Mm-hmm.
as opposed to a materially conscious state, which you're saying is like unconscious. Material conscious state. So your question is, right, that's a Krishna conscious state. I think we have to stop. You want to ask a question, Sadhguru? This whole line of discussion started up with the question, is this not an improper way of encouraging the devotees in their devotional service if it's promoting the wrong conception? It's not promoting the wrong conception. To think that we're the doer. It's appreciating the service that's being rendered to Krishna. Depending upon the degree of advancement of the devotees involved, they'll understand more or less what that appreciation and glorification actually is. If their understanding isn't correct, if it encourages them in